You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Abelardo Morel. We're going to be talking about his work and his process. Abe, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you.
Let's begin with what I know of your beginnings in 1991 with a first image you took, and without, you know, introducing it or reading into it much more, what was happening then, and what was that image that you took or processed?
Well, in 1991, I made my first camera obscura image in an apartment we were renting in Quincy, Massachusetts. But the prehistory to that is that for a number of years, I had been turning classrooms where I taught at the Massachusetts College of Art, turning classrooms into camera obscuras by darkening all the windows and then putting just a small, you know, hole, a 3/8 of an inch hole on a dark plastic. Just that alone would bring in Huntington Avenue upside down on the walls. So it was my way of teaching students the prehistory of photography, the optical nature of the basis for photography.
Let me just ask you about that, because it is radio and it's so kind of weird to explain.
Sure.
Phenomena. You take a whole room, you darken the whole room, you darken all the windows, and just correct me if I'm wrong or re-explain this, but all the windows are darkened. There's nothing on the walls of the room, or at least on the walls facing the window. And then there's a 3/8 hole in essentially one of the curtains or plastic over the windows that brings in light and projects it on the wall. Is that correct?
Correct. That hole alone, it's primitive. It's not super, super sharp, but it's very readable. You know, whatever is outside that room will be projected upside down on the opposite wall. It comes in, and you know, in color as well, by the way.
Isn't there a ratio too? Like how big is your wall, and how far is your wall from that hole? Like doesn't it depend on the size of the room and all kinds of factors, or no?
No, with pinhole photography, or, you know, the focal length of, you know, the room, the distance from the window to the wall, it doesn't matter. It will be equally sharp a foot away or 30 feet away. That's one of the nice things about pinhole photography, that it's a hole will give you the same kind of clarity throughout different lengths.
So tell me a little more about that process. I mean, I just wanted to you know, reiterate that, because that's such a fascinating and very primitive idea, the reversal of the image on the wall. So you were doing that to talk about it, I'm sorry, going from there.
Yes. So I made a lot of these demonstrations for my students, and it was always wonderful to see these very savvy, you know, cynical students kind of react in a way that were like seeing God or something. It was like a total disbelief. So I knew there was something powerful about that demonstration. So in 1991, I thought, why don't I make a picture of that event, that a room actually being converted into a huge camera by putting a hole in a dark space, and then trying to record that image. And that's what took a while to figure out. How long of an exposure, you know, basically I have a camera inside that room focusing on the walls. And so it took me a whole summer to figure out exposure times. And it, as it turns out, it was about an 8-hour exposure at the time that made that image actually come out.
That's fascinating. So that's a really interesting step too. Just so everybody understands, and to be clear, pinhole photography is, you know, that thing that many kids did in school, where you take a, you know, an oatmeal canister and put in a piece of photographically sensitive paper and make literally a pinhole in one side to project that image. And sometimes it can take, you know, a minute or more. But in your case, this took 8 hours, you're saying, to create an image exposed on the paper.
Yeah, exactly. The distance from the hole to the far wall, it's like from here to the sun compared to a little oatmeal box, which is, you know, 3 inches. So the longer the distance is from the hole to the back, the longer that light has to travel, and you know, it becomes a much longer exposure to get it right. So thinking about that, I began to actually make pictures inside the rooms, which I had never seen that happen before. In art history classes, people talk a lot about camera obscuras and Vermeer and people like that, Canaletto. But a photograph inside a camera obscura, for some reason, had never been done. So I felt like I was onto something. You know, what a way to describe what the principles of photography are, and also making something new out of it.
Right. That's interesting. Of course, there has been like pinhole photography of very long exposures, but actually to kind of see what was being seen in the camera obscura, that is kind of unusual. So that was an exciting kind of breakthrough moment for you. And then I want to talk about your book, The Universe Next Door, but I also want to get to what happened next, but between there. So you began making these large-scale images, pinhole images of camera obscura, and how was that received, and how did that feel? I mean, you knew you were onto something, but how did that enter into the world?
I think people were taken by it because essentially it's not some Photoshop bullshit, you know, just inventing it. It's the real physics of the world making an image. And then my photographs of that were fairly straight photographs of that magic. So I think people liked the idea that it was honest and true, and that kind of truthness reveals some surrealism that, I don't know, it was very interesting. To me, anyway, the idea of a small room containing New York City felt very exciting. You know, the kind of things that I loved in Magritte and the surrealists, now I was achieving with something quite, normally.
Right, that's that is so exciting. And then, to me, there's something also kind of haunting and very, primitive is the wrong word, but that's what comes to mind, primitive feeling. You know, it feels kind of like the birth of photography, you know, and
yes,
and almost like the ghost that should be there as well or something.
Well, think of it, you know, during that time, my exposures were quite long. By the way, now I'm using digital cameras, so exposures have gone down from 8 hours to about 3 minutes. So, but at the time, those long exposures of, say, Times Square revealed no people, even though there were millions of people walking there in 8 hours. So there's something haunting, you're right, about the idea of this disappearance of humans in these crowded spaces. Like the Daguerre, the famous Daguerre photograph of the guy getting the shoe shine on Paris Boulevard. You know, there's a haunting presence of shadows.
It's so true. And between that time and now is the span of time that your book, The Universe Next Door, covers. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. It from 1991 to now, I make different kinds of works, you know, still lives, landscapes, portraits of things, ideas of motion. So there's a number of works that I make. But in terms of the camera obscura evolution, it began with a 3/8 inch hole. And now, instead of a hole, I have special diopters, these lenses that I can get ground to focus at different lengths. So, you know, I have a number of lenses that will be adequate for, say, a 20-foot-long room. So the result is that the images, my images now, are very, very sharp. They're a lot brighter because the diopters are bigger. I'm actually shooting in color as well. And in some ways, I'm turning the images coming in right side up, which I've developed over time, the idea of doing that. So the transformation is pretty radical, from a soft black and white upside down picture to a very crisp color photograph of something that takes place within 2 minutes. So the idea of time, the nature of time in my pictures has really radically changed. You know, a moment, say the moment of Old Faithful in Yellowstone, I have a picture of it exploding, you know, just shooting out. So I'm able to capture the discrete moments now, and I really like that. It feels more like regular photography than ancient primitive photography.
That's very interesting. And also over that time, you've, in a sense, you know, I know this, it doesn't all refer to like the birth or beginning of photography, but the idea of essentially making your own lenses and developing this process, it is a little bit like building the first camera, isn't it?
Yes. And I like that. I like the fact that I could poke around in the past for, say, tools or ideas, but then make photographs that seem to be much more contemporary and having ideas that are quite of now, you know. So that straddling of the two senses of time is really important to me. I'm not a nostalgic kind of guy, you know, where I want to get back to Talbot's, you know, the way he coated the paper or anything like that. I'm just not interested in that kind of recipe, you know. But I am, I look at the past in terms of how to drink from where they drank, you know, and get that spirit.
And to understand that the book, and there is links to this book in here so that people can look at it or buy it, whatever they want to do. But the images in there, especially the one on the cover, which kind of talks about this upside down image and the way that looks like a digital image to me, or maybe it's not, but it's of the camera obscura. Now you have an entire room that's specially built, or screens that have lenses that are more
no,
or less something you can move around, because that does look very crisp.
The difference is that I still go to places with rooms that have interesting views, so that has not changed. The difference is that instead of putting a hole on the plastic looking out in these darkened spaces, is that I have a given lens on looking out that will be crisp on the opposite wall. It will be sharp. So the vividness of the image is really enhanced. So that's the big difference. And then in terms of putting the images right side up, I use a prism sometimes to affect that. But these are still rooms that I find that people say they have. And the cover pictures of an apartment or a condo looking at Central Park. And I was lucky enough to have access to that a room over four seasons, so it was really neat to try to evoke time not just in hours but also in seasons.
That's fantastic. And so in closing, I want to talk just a little more about the book itself. So that's spanning, you know, what we've talked briefly about from 1991 almost to now.
Yes.
Would you call the book The Universe Next Door? And, it obviously has this theme of the evolution of how you've worked. And is that how you see the whole book? It is a monograph, but an evolution of your work? Or is there some other, anything else overriding that, you know, is thematic that we should discuss?
No, I think you're right. I think it is an evolution of how I work, which takes on different branches of ideas. So a camera obscura is one element, still lives, photograms, and more recently, the idea of taking the idea of camera obscura into a more portable format. I've been sort of invented this tent camera idea where my tent is outfitted with a periscope where when you're inside this tent, the periscope brings in images of surrounding landscape directly onto the ground where we're sitting. So that idea of, you know, translating a landscape onto the ground and then making a picture of it is an evolution of that idea of the camera obscura. The nice thing is that the ground, of course, has different patinas and surfaces. So every time you see, you know, when you see a landscape of mountains, say, on dirt, it's a very sort of, it's a, you know, unique sandwich of reality. So that's part of it. The idea of the title.
That's beautiful. I love that idea. I'm so glad you mentioned that. I can of course picture that. That's a camera obscura in a portable tent that you can bring anywhere in the world. I mean, that's something you're doing now and have images from.
In fact, I was in Monet's garden in Giverny last June, where I brought my tent camera into his garden. So I've been making pictures of his flowers and gardens onto the ground itself in the garden. So you get almost like a ready-made impressionism automatically. So I know it's wild, and I'm going back in April to make some camera obscuras of the Rouen Cathedral and places on the coast. So it's my most recent project, making pictures following Monet's work in Normandy.
And so again, that process is also one that you've invented a lens type system. I mean, that periscope, right? What's happening with that periscope? You've invented a tent, but now we have something that I suppose is similar to like a submarine periscope, but you're having lenses made, or you're using other lenses, and you're making this kind of contraption, right?
Yes. I feel like I need to, in order to follow a certain instinct, I need to talk to scientists and physicists and develop a way to get to the idea. You know, it's fun to be a part-time scientist, although I'm not very good at it, so I rely on real people. But that idea sort of, developed, the tent idea developed from the idea of, why can't I make my camera obscura pictures a portable thing? Why can't I bring it anywhere? And I've taken it to Italy, national parks, France, Spain. It's fun and weird, and I really like the challenge of it. The title of the book is The Universe Next Door, and it comes from an E.E. Cummings poem, where the last line is something like, listen, there's a hell of a universe next door. Let's go. I really like that idea of thinking that, you know, when you think you're in one universe, next door is something also quite interesting. Why? You don't need to have a special rocket. Just go next door and you'll find it.
Thank you so much for talking with me today, Abe. It's really been a pleasure discussing your work.
Thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.